Turkey invades the Kurdish region of northern Syria and brings even more war to the Middle East, while Trump takes backlash from most sides. Let's talk about the latest, plus look at both sides of the issue on this week's edition of Mideast News Brief. And hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Mideast News Brief. I am your host, Winston R. Holland. And I don't know about you guys, but these past few days have not been an easy one for me. Watching what has unfolded basically since Trump's conversation with the quote president of Turkey this past weekend, and seeing what was anticipated to happen, and now seeing what has actually happened, has been no less than a very, very large disappointment. If you've listened to this show at all, you guys know that I am a big supporter of the president. I am a big supporter of his foreign policy. And there's still part of me, if I'm being totally honest, there's still part of me that wonders if he's right, if he did make the right move. Maybe he did when he decided to pull troops out of northern Syria, reposition them, and get them out of the way for a Turkish invasion of northern Syria. I have my big doubts that that was the right decision. And we could go into multiple reasons why, and we're going to do that. We're going to look at both sides of the issue today. But Turkey has invaded. Turkey is invading. They are bombing northern Syria. Many Kurdish fighters have been killed. Civilians have been killed. And it is no less than an enormous tragedy. Now, of course, a little context here. The Syrian civil war has not stopped since it began in 2011. So this is not a conflict without consequence, and it's not a decision by President Trump without consequence. And look, here's the essential reality. Regardless of whether it was, you could argue whether it was a good decision or not, if ISIS is emboldened, and if that prison, because there's a ISIS prisoner camp that the Kurds of northern Syria, that the Kurdish forces, the SDF, are guarding. There's about 70,000 people in this camp. About 10,000 of them are ISIS fighters, and the rest are their family. I think it's like 60 to 70,000 in this camp in northern Syria. If the SDF has to leave their posts to ward off a Turkish invasion, if they can't guard that camp, we are going to see the release of thousands of ISIS soldiers. And if we see a resurgence of ISIS, even potentially a caliphate, because remember, it was just earlier this year that the caliphate officially fell. And Trump he's 100% right when he says 100% of the ISIS caliphate was destroyed. But of course, there are ISIS sleeper cells. It is a threat. It's been a looming threat. And of course, you know they want their caliphate to return. So if that were to happen, it would be a foreign policy disaster on a scale that could affect his reelection chances. And keeping even 50 troops in the area, which is what he said on one tweet, keeping 50 troops in the area, or even keeping 1,000 troops in the area to We need this president reelected. The Democrats are so radical on the left. I mean, literally socialist. And they've sold socialism to young people as some type of, I don't know, just some big Lollapalooza or something like that, where we smoke weed and drink beer and everybody makes the same amount of money. That's not socialism. Socialism is rampant poverty. Socialism is rampant tyranny. We need this president to be reelected. And if ISIS comes back after being defeated as a, like a geographic caliphate, that will hurt his election chances. Now, of course, I still think he's going to win, and I think he's going to win potentially in a landslide. But that's with current models that really don't incorporate some huge foreign policy blunder. Now, that being said, so often when the foreign policy establishments, those on the left and the right, get all up in arms when the world in the past has gotten up in arms about a decision by Trump, we've seen it hasn't been as bad as we thought. Take, for example, the decision to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, the U.S. embassy in Israel. How did that go? Did the world end? It did not. When Trump recognized the Golan Heights, did the world end? It did not. So there's been part of me these past several days that has really been wondering if it's going to be as tragic, perhaps, as I was concerned about. Well, there is a tragedy in that there is a Turkish invasion going on right now. Now, let's talk about the Kurds for a second. Well, before we do that, we'll talk about the Kurds some. Give a little bit more perspective on them. Let's just basically get the latest on what is going on right now as of this podcast on Thursday, October 10th, 2019. This is from Reuters. Thousands flee, dozens reported killed as Turkey pushes Syria assault. Turkey pounded Kurdish militia in northeast Syria for a second day on Thursday, forcing tens of thousands of people to flee and killing dozens in a cross-border assault on U.S. allies that has turned the Washington establishment against Donald Trump. As if the Washington establishment was not already against Donald Trump. I mean, it is truly amazing. Anyway, no need to go into that. We're aware of that on the left and right, the Washington establishment, no matter if they put a D or an R next to their name, they are against Donald Trump. The Turkish offensive against the U.S. allied Syrian Democratic Forces, launched days after Trump pulled U.S. troops out of the way, opens one of the biggest new fronts in years in an 8-year-old civil war that has drawn in global powers. At least 23 fighters with the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, SDF, and 6 fighters with the Turkish-backed Syrian rebel group had been killed, said the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which monitors Syria's 8-year-old war. The SDF said Turkish airstrikes and shelling had also killed 9 civilians. In an apparent retaliation by Kurdish-led forces, 6 people, including a 9-month-old baby, were killed by mortar and rocket fire into Turkish border towns, officials in southeastern Turkey said. So we're already seeing bloodshed, we're seeing violence, and there's really no reason to think that it's going to stop. Here's the reality, and I'll get to more of the story in a minute, but the reality is that Turkey ultimately wants the Kurds gone. Because remember, there are Kurdish populations throughout the Middle East, in Syria, in Iraq, in Turkey, in Iran, even a little bit in Armenia, who we talked about, I think, a couple weeks ago, that they actually recognized Jerusalem as the as the capital of Israel. We'll take what we can get, right? So there, I mean, there's a Kurdish, there's the Kurdish population. If you look it up on a map, it's, you know, you're looking at northern Iraq, northeastern Syria, eastern Turkey, and western Iran. The last thing that Erdogan in Turkey, Assad in Syria, the mullahs in Iran, or Iraq want is a Kurdish state. The interesting thing about the Kurds, and at least in northeastern Syria, where they have some autonomy, they are more of a secular Muslim group, and that even Christians, Syrian Christians, talk about the freedom in the Kurdish area that basically exists there, that it does not exist anywhere else in the Middle East, except for, you could say, Israel and perhaps Lebanon to some extent, although Lebanon is greatly compromised by Hezbollah, which is an Iranian proxy terrorist group. So the last thing Turkey wants is a Kurdish state. And this is, I mean, his given reason is that they're a threat, they're a terrorist group, they're whatever. But ultimately, he wants the Kurds gone. I want the Kurds to have a state, because the reports that I'm reading over and over and over and over again from Christians in the area is that they actually have protection in the at least the Kurdish region of Syria. That they are, the majority of them are Sunni Muslims, but it is more of a secular state, perhaps resembling something more so of a Turkey before the Islamist thug Recep Tayyip Erdogan has taken power. And I mean, he really sees himself as a caliph, in the same way that the delusional thugs in Iran see themselves as basically the head of a Islamic state. Now, Turkey is Sunni, Iran is Shia. They might work together some, but ultimately they're going to never be friends, and that's going to create a conflict. And if you follow me on Twitter at Mideast Briefing, then you'll see where I actually shared a link to a story there about the potential conflict between the two. So this is a disaster. But I'm going to get to, because, you know, one thing that you have to think about in all this, right? If the world is going crazy and it's such a disaster, right, that the U.S., and we got to think about this, right? Because it's easy to not think about this, because really we've been conditioned to not think about this. But if it's so awful and it's so terrible that the U.S. is pulling out of that region and it's going to result in a genocide of the Kurds, and it's helping the thuggish Turkish regime, it's helping Iran, it's helping ISIS, it's helping Al-Qaeda, it's going to destroy the world. Well, then where are all those nations that are so worried about it? Where are they? You think the Kurds would not welcome them with open arms to come in and help them out? I'm pretty sure they would. But it's like, oh, it's terrible that the U.S. has pulled out, and all the other nations that actually don't have a gigantic ocean between them and that, and what I would call Kurdistan, do nothing. And that's what's the ultimate, I think, sick irony about it all. Look, you can make a strong, strong case, and we're going to talk about it more, that the U.S. should not have pulled out. And I tend to agree with that. But dang, if it's so terrible that we did, and we're going to go and we're going to condemn the U.S., How about everybody send 100 troops? We'll solve this problem really quick. But no, because the U.S. is responsible to do freaking everything in the world, and I'm sick of it. I'm going to have to turn down the AC in here. The International Rescue Committee said 64,000 people in Syria have fled since the campaign began. That's a lot. The towns of Ras al Ain and Darbasiya, some 60 kilometers to the east, have been largely deserted as a result of the attack. The observatory said Turkish forces had seized 2 villages near Ras al Ain and 5 near the town of Tel Abyad, while a spokesman for Syrian rebel forces said the towns were surrounded after fighters seized the villages around them. Turkey's defense ministry said 174 militants had been killed so far. Kurds say they were resisting the assault. Life in Kurdistan ain't easy, man. Life in Kurdistan, it has been years and years and years. It's just warfare. That's the whole region. According to a senior Turkish security official, the armed forces struck weapons and ammunition depots, gun and sniper positions, tunnels, and military bases. Jets flew operations up to 30 kilometers into Syria, a limit which Turkey's foreign minister said Turkish forces would not go beyond. We'll see about that. A Reuters journalist saw shells exploding just outside Tel Abyad. I mean, ultimately what they're trying to do is what Erdogan has called a safe zone. I mean, talk about newspeak, right? A safe zone. It's kind of like saying revenue enhancement instead of we're raising your taxes. We're enhancing revenue. That's what newspeak is. And to call what Erdogan's trying to do a safe zone is perhaps a bit misleading, right? Because when Turkey takes over an area, the last thing you're going to get is a safe zone. The only people that are going to have any physical protection are those who are in lockstep with the tyrannical Turkish sultan. But what he's trying to do essentially is to create a buffer zone, a safe zone, some kind of in northern Syria. And so maybe he's right. Maybe he won't go more than 30 kilometers. But his goal is to take over a strip of northern Syria. If you look it up on a map, just type in Syria in Google Maps or whatever, and you could even look up a Turkish safe zone and get the results there. But that's essentially what he's trying to do, because in his mind the Turks are, or I'm sorry, the Kurds are, you know, they're terrorists. Now, that doesn't mean that I think that we need to be careful not to have a overly rosy view of the Kurds, because there are elements of the Kurdish people that are extreme, that have conducted terrorist type activities in the past. But at least the area of northern Syria that is being invaded, that the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces, are in control of, again, Christians reporting over and over that they've actually have freedom there. Muslims have become Christians with no repercussions. Hear that? Muslims have become Christians with no repercussions. Now, it's one thing for, let's take an Assad, for example, which is why we should have never allowed a Syrian civil war to happen. But Syria was protecting its 10%. Assad was protecting its 10% Christian population. Now, that doesn't mean that Muslims were allowed to leave Islam. It just meant that the Muslim authorities were not forcing Christians to convert. There was some level of freedom there. Now, and especially anywhere that Turkey takes over, nada. But in the Kurdish area, there actually is. There people can actually, they can actually come to Christ and not be killed as a result. Trump, who has faced rare criticism from senior figures in his own Republican Party who accused him of deserting loyal U.S. allies, said on Twitter that he was talking to, quote, both sides. He warned Ankara it would be hit hard financially if it did not play by the rules. Well, Mr. President, they are not playing by the rules. And so I hope you stand strong and do something strong. And we are, we'll report on that too. I'm giving Trump time to make the right decision on this. Ultimately, I think this was the wrong decision. But who knows? Well, let's see what happens. Let's pray. Let's pray for sure. And then let's see what happens. The SDF has been the main allies of U.S. forces on the ground in the battle against Islamic State since 2014. They have been holding thousands of captured IS fighters and tens of thousands of their relatives in detention. So that's basically the latest. Dozens killed, wars going on, bombing. I even saw a story where the Turkish Navy is surrounding different areas, surrounded the island of Cyprus. They're up to all kinds of interesting antics. So we will see. We will see. How did this is I'm a big fan of Benjamin Netanyahu, and he hasn't come out and condemned Trump, but he did come out and say that he is strongly condemning the Turkish military action and offering humanitarian assistance. He said, quote, Israel strongly condemns the Turkish invasion of the Kurdish areas in Syria and warns against the ethnic cleansing of the Kurds by Turkey and its proxies. Israel is prepared to extend humanitarian assistance to the gallant Kurdish people. Humanitarian assistance isn't really what they need right now. I mean, they will need that, I guess, on some level, but they need help so that more humanitarian assistance is not needed. Trump's Syria withdrawal doesn't put America first. It puts our adversaries first. This is by Blaise Missal from the Daily Caller. So we are getting into the negative side of what Trump did, and then we'll move into reasons why it might have been a good idea. We're exploring both sides. I'm going to give y'all the facts that I can give you guys, and then, again, we will see what happens. President Trump promised to mount a robust defense of his vital U.S. interests while bringing to an end costly foreign interventions. His decision on Sunday to pull back U.S. troops from some of their positions in northern Syria unfortunately serves only to undermine both these goals. It will perpetuate, not end, endless wars. It puts U.S. competitors, not America, first. Clarity on what the administration decision involves is critical to understanding its implications. At issue is not whether U.S. troops should be stationed in northern Syria. In fact, it would be incorrect to describe the administration's move as a withdrawal from Syria. Rather, the original White House statement announced that, quote, United States forces will no longer be in the immediate area of Turkey's long-planned operation in northern Syria. That is, the U.S. is only moving some of its troops, as few as 50, out of parts of northern Syria. Given that northern Syria is controlled by the predominantly Kurdish Syrian Democratic Forces, which had led the fight against ISIS on the ground, the original announcement seemed to be setting up a potential clash between Turkey and the SDF. This has since been muddied, however, by presidential tweets that have both warned Turkey against invading northern Syria and reaffirmed U.S. support for the Kurds. The question, thus, is whether moving 50 soldiers in order to get out of the way of a potential but apparently undesirable Turkish-Kurdish conflict furthers American interests. It's hard to see how it does. First, the decision by itself does not end the U.S. presence in Syria. So we're still there. Those troops didn't come home. They're still there. Second, the U.S. presence in Syria is not a costly, unending foreign intervention as Iraq and Afghanistan have been. There are some 1,000 U.S. troops in Syria today, compared to 100,000 in Afghanistan and 160,000 in Iraq at the height of those conflicts. Exact costs are hard to come by, but educated guesstimates suggest that in 2018, the military spent roughly $120 million each month on U.S. forces in Syria. And that was before the president halved the number of troops there in early 2019. In other words, to keep troops in Syria for a year, the U.S. is spending roughly the equivalent of what it spends on Social Security in just 12 hours. In terms of human cost, a total of 8 service members have died in the more than 5 years that the U.S. military has been operating in Syria. Third, for a small but not insignificant cost in blood and treasure, the U.S. was getting a lot of bang. It had recruited a local force, that would be the Kurds, to destroy ISIS. It was keeping ISIS from returning the territory it once held. It was keeping Iran, Hezbollah, Russia, and the Syrian government from seizing control of critical oil-producing regions, which would have fueled their campaign of regional aggression. And apparently with just 50 troops, it was staving off a Turkish-Kurdish war. Already these gains are unraveling. ISIS resumed attacks in Syria almost immediately. Both Turkish and Russian forces have started attacking SDF positions. And to defend itself, the SDS have stopped guarding ISIS prisoners. Just as the U.S. withdrawal from Iraq in 2011 precipitated the rise of ISIS and the return of U.S. troops, so this decision is pitching the region back into a conflict that will inevitably draw the U.S. back in. I don't know that they have completely stopped guarding ISIS prisoners. The last I had heard on it is that there was still that possibility. So I'm not actually sure about that. It's quite possible that some have had to leave the ISIS prison camp. Finally, this move puts an anti-American authoritarian, not America, first. The president's motivation was U.S. allies' failure to share the burden of stabilizing northern Syria and dealing with thousands of ISIS prisoners. This is a real problem. But the solution, to entrust this task to Turkey, only makes it worse. Under Erdogan, Turkey became a jihadi highway for ISIS recruits. It supplied weapons to Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups, jailed Americans, including Pastor Brunson, and bought Russian weapons. Erdogan is no friend to America, and it is naive to believe he will protect U.S. interests in Syria rather than recklessly pursue his own, whatever the cost for the U.S. For want of 50 troops, the U.S. is fueling the cycle of endless war and putting Erdogan's demands ahead of American interests. It is not worth it. All right, I think that's a pretty good summary of the anti-Trump or the anti-Trump decision to pull troops away from Syria. So now let's listen to the man himself. Let's listen to President Trump and what he had to say about it when he was initially asked about this.
Withdrawing forces from Syria, why are you siding with an authoritarian leader and not our Kurdish allies?
Well, I'm not siding with anybody. We've been in Syria for many years. You know, Syria was supposed to be a short-term hit, just a very short-term hit, and we were supposed to be in and out. That was many, many years ago, and we only have 50 people in that area. That's a small sector. And I don't want those 50 people hurt or killed or anything. I don't want anything bad to happen to our people. And I told that to President Erdogan. I said, don't hurt any of our people get hurt. Big trouble. Now, a couple of things. I think there's a lot of pressure on Turkey. They've been fighting with the PKK for many years. They're natural enemies. Have you read today a couple of reports saying that when President Obama started this whole thing, as you know, it was started by President Obama, he created a natural war with Turkey and their longtime enemy, PKK, and they're still there, and they're still hating each other beyond anybody's belief. But I have told Turkey that if they do anything outside of what we would think is humane, to use the word a second time. We talk about Hong Kong. We talk about this. They could suffer the wrath of an extremely decimated economy. And I've done it once. I did it with Pastor Brunson. You remember the Pastor Brunson? And they wouldn't give Pastor Brunson back, and they ended up giving Pastor Brunson back pretty quickly. Their currency fell at record levels, and lots of other things happened. And it was good. I have a very good relationship with President Erdogan. I want to see it happen. I will tell you this, though. We defeated ISIS. And when I wanted to, when we were at 96 and 95 and 97%, I sort of said, let the other countries in the area finish it off. And I was met with a lot of anger from some people in our country. I said, all right, I'll finish it off. And I got together with our generals. I flew to Iraq. I got together, and we did it very quickly, far quicker than any general from here told us we could do it. We had some great people over there. They did it quickly. And I said to the European countries, you got to take your ISIS. You know, we have 60,000, maybe even 70,000 people. That includes families. That includes wives of fighters that were killed. We have many fighters that were killed in the battles. And we took it over 100% of the caliphate. I took over quickly. Nobody else was. It was a mess when I came to office. And I think most of you would agree to that. It was a real mess. I took it over. But then I said, what are we going to do with these 60 to 70,000 people that are being held and being guarded, and we can't release them, and many fighters also? And I said, I want them to go back to Germany, to France, to different European countries from where they came. And I said to the European countries, I said to all of them, take the people back. And they said, no, 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 we don't want to do it. We don't want them back. I said, well, they came from Germany or they came from France. Take them back. And they're so used to the United States being a sucker, being a fool. We're talking about billions and billions of dollars. You're talking about life. You're talking about so many things, so many elements, and elements of complexity, because they're going to walk back into Germany. They're going to go back into these countries from where they came. So I said, take them back. And they said, no. And then I said, again, I'm going to give you another 30 days. Take them back. And they kept saying no. Maybe they won't be saying no now. I don't know. So I told President Erdogan, it's going to be your responsibility. Now, really, who's responsible? It's really Russia. It's Turkey. It's Iran. It's Iraq. And it's Syria and anybody else in the neighborhood. Okay? We call it the neighborhood. It's not a friendly neighborhood. But these countries should do it.
All right. So there was a lot there. It was interesting to say he's not siding with anyone. I don't think that was the right thing to say. I think that he should side with the Kurds, clearly and unequivocally. He made a good point that Syria was supposed to be a short-term hit, get out. We tend to never leave anywhere that we go. But was this the right time? I mean, is it ever the right time? He said only have 50 people in that area. He threatened Erdogan, if you do anything outside of what's humane, you could suffer the wrath of a decimated economy. Their currency fell when he basically pushed to get a Pastor Andrew Brunson released. Currency fell. They gave that over. So let's see what Trump does in the sanctions area. Let's watch and let's see. They are, you know, you heard that the Turkey and the PKK were fighting, that the rivals and so forth. If you're curious what the PKK is, that is the Kurdistan Workers Party, which is a basically Marxist-Leninist socialist group. So it's certainly not, the PKK is certainly not anything that we would, anyone that we would want to, we would call our close friends, unless you are perhaps Bernie Sanders or Pete Buttigieg or something like that. But they're essentially not. He rightly said they defeated the ISIS caliphate, but of course that ISIS caliphate can come back. And if the ISIS caliphate comes back, it might not be a problem for people living in America yet, but it is a problem for the Christians and other religious minorities that will be slaughtered, as they have been in the past and brutally since the beginning of the Syrian civil war, really the Iraqi invasion of Iraq, the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, then the Syrian civil war. And then, look, he put the responsibility of the ISIS fighters on Russia, Turkey, Iran, Iraq, Syria. For one, the Kurds were in charge of that. And two, the problem is you can't put Turkey in charge of ISIS if Turkey has allowed ISIS free rein and even aided and abetted ISIS in the past, Al-Qaeda and so forth. So I wouldn't want to put Turkey in charge of ISIS fighters. Iran, not sure what they're not going to be in charge. Iraq, the people that need to be in charge immediately would be the Kurds, because that's where the Kurds, obviously, that's where they exist geographically. So we'll see. Now, this is another op-ed from the Daily Caller. Moving troops out of Syria was the right call, and Trump should go further. This is William Ruger. October 9th, official Washington was rocked Sunday night by the Trump administration's announcement that it was pulling military forces from the Syria-Turkey border. Trump took to Twitter first thing Monday to explain, noting that, quote, "It is time for us to get out of these ridiculous endless wars, many of them tribal, and bring our soldiers home." Which is interesting. This is what, isn't this what the left has been saying for 20 years? He then added that Turkey, Europe, Syria, Iran, Iraq, Russia, and the Kurds will now have to figure this situation out. While families of these troops likely said thank God, and careful observers saw that this was only a redeployment of a small number of forces rather than the withdrawal suggested by Trump's tweets, the foreign policy establishment went ballistic. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, for example, Hillary is doing media tours. She's gotten a tan or something, or attempted to. Will she run? That is the question. Quote, "Let us be clear. The president has sided with authoritarian leaders of Turkey and Russia over our loyal allies and America's own interests." Iran nuclear deal. Excuse me. Sorry. Just have something in my throat. I actually do have something in my throat. It's really been annoying me. Not to be outdone, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham stated, quote, "This impulsive decision by the president has undone all the gains we've made and thrown the region into further chaos." Of course, it would be easier for Americans to believe these folks if it weren't for the fact that, to use President Trump's words from the 2016 campaign trail, they have, quote, "perfect resumes, but very little to brag about except responsibility for a long history of failed policies and continued losses at war." In this case, even though it is a small redeployment, Trump is right to pull back those troops. As has been the case repeatedly since the end of the Cold War, the foreign policy elite is wrong. Indeed. Remember the foreign policy elite, many within Reagan's own party, even many within Reagan's own party, did not want him to say, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." People in his own administration, he went against his administration to say that, which was the right thing to say at the right time. And now goes down in history as one of the greatest pronouncements that a president has ever done. And the president seems to understand this. He tweeted recently that, quote, "going into the Middle East is the worst decision ever made." While there are other historical foreign policy missteps that would rival our Middle Eastern blunders, Trump understands that what we've been doing isn't working. Noting in the same tweet that we have spent trillions in the region and, quote, "thousands of our great soldiers have died or been badly wounded." Of course, the establishment panics every time he wants to reduce ever so slightly America's military footprint abroad. But we need to go even further. We need to withdraw not only from Syria, but Afghanistan as well. This minor pullback should only be the first step. Here is why a fuller withdrawal is in order. First, we are stuck in the middle of a multi-sided fight in which our interests are extremely limited. We went in to destroy ISIS's territorial caliphate that could provide a base of operations for this violent terrorist organization. We accomplished that goal, and we can safely leave it up to local actors who share our interests to keep ISIS down and out. Buck passing to those with greater stakes in the outcome and better knowledge about how to effectively handle threats is a time-honored tradition in international politics. If ISIS poses a threat to American interests in the future, our long-range strike capabilities are more than capable of keeping us safe without a permanent garrison in Syria. Second, the Kurdish groups in Syria that we are protecting in the region aren't exactly ideal partners. Indeed, one has espoused a communist ideology, that would be the PKK, a Kurdistan Workers Party that we just talked about, is an offshoot of a group of the U.S. State Department lists of terrorist organizations and is feuded with other Kurdish groups in Iraq that have also fought against ISIS. Third, one dangerous consequence of remaining in Syria is that we could end up in a fight with Iranian proxies or Russian forces that could drag the U.S. into a broader war that would be unnecessary and extremely costly. The fact is that both countries have long-standing ties to Syria, and thus their footprint in the country is not new. They too have an interest in keeping ISIS down, and it is our advantage to have those countries tied up helping the Syrian government. A broken Syria is no gift to our adversaries. Fourth, Americans understand that we have more important priorities. Our national debt is a growing threat to our future prosperity and security. We'd be wise to focus on it rather than a desolate corner of a ruined country halfway around the world that matters very little to our safety or prosperity. And as our new national security strategy emphasizes, great powers such as China should receive more of an attitude than fourth-rate powers in the Middle East. You know, the question of what to do about, take for example, American missionaries abroad. This is something that has been a question since the early 1800s, maybe even the late 1700s. You know, what is the U.S.'s role in the world to protect Christians and other religious minorities? I mean, I see both sides. I mean, is it really our job to be going around the world and protecting all these people? On the other hand, the amount, the Christian populations in the Middle East have just been decimated by the Islamic theocracies, genocide. And I think we step in with genocide, even if other countries don't do it. I see how we don't step in, or at least provide some air support, like we did with the Kurds fighting ISIS. Providing that air support, it worked remarkably. Why not do the same, at least in this instance? So as you can see, I see all the points that this gentleman is making. They're good points, but I see the cost to be relatively low to protect this particular region. And lastly, this is good policy and good politics. Polling shows that our Middle East wars are not popular. No, they're not. And again, I'm not a neocon. I mean, I don't think we should have gone in Iraq, but I do think we pulled out of Iraq too early, which ended up allowing ISIS to thrive and become what it became. But the last thing I care about is supporting the military-industrial complex. The last thing I'm worried about is Boeing making the money that Boeing needs. Interestingly, Nikki Haley ended up on the board of Boeing. Very interesting. We'll have to explore that a bit further and what the ramifications could be. And lastly, this is good policy and good politics. Polling shows that our Middle East wars are not popular. Oh, I already said that. I'm sorry. Trump said, quote, I fully understand both sides of it, but I campaigned on the fact that I was going to bring our soldiers home and bring them home as rapidly as possible. So now I want to move to a more of a strongly direct Christian viewpoint on this. This is from the Family Research Council yesterday. Death comes to northeast Syria, the human cost of Trump's withdrawal of forces. The worst fears of those living under the autonomous administration of North and East Syria are becoming a reality after President Trump made the decision on Sunday to remove U.S. troops from the area. Why is FRC focused on our mission to advance faith, family, and freedom, weighing in on this situation? Far from home? Because at risk is not just the massacre of our Kurdish allies, the potential resurgence of ISIS, the reputation of the United States, and another major conflict in the Middle East. Also at risk is the destruction of the one place in the Middle East, outside of Israel, where Christians, Muslims, and Yazidis live in peace and religious freedom thrives. Under the Syrian Democratic Forces and the autonomous administration of North and East Syria, religious minorities in Northeast Syria found protection and equal rights, an anomaly in the Middle East. Out of the midst of the Syrian civil war, hope sprang in the form of a federal government system that represents and protects segments of society which are often neglected and abused in the Middle East, including women and the Christian minority. In addition to other religious minorities, Syriac Christians have found safety under the Kurdish-led administration. This is one of the oldest Christian communities in the world, and they are trying to maintain a presence in the Middle East, the birthplace of the Christian faith. Syriac Christians still speak a dialect of Aramaic today, and Syriac Christian culture is experiencing a renaissance. As Turkish forces move into northeast Syria, we shouldn't expect that they will take care of this community. Not take care as in caring for them, take them out. Even in the past few years, Turkey has allied itself with jihadist groups responsible for killing Christians elsewhere in Syria. With the present Turkish incursion, Christians in northeast Syria face the potential of attack or displacement. It would be tragic to these Christians subjected to abuse or death as a result of Turkish actions. And it would also be tragic to see the loss of a historic Christian presence in the region. I think that the risks of doing what we did were not worth it, ultimately. I could be wrong. I could be wrong, and Trump is right to pull them out. I do worry about our reputation of, it does appear to be abandoning allies in the region, that if you do have allies, now officially, we're not allies with the Kurds, but we did ally with the Kurds, did we not, in the battle against ISIS. They are natural allies in the Middle East, just like Israel is a natural ally. Why? Because of shared values. The whole idea of like, oh, I don't know, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, basic democratic values, the Kurds share with us. And essentially, with the potential just ethnic cleansing that Turkey wants to do, I ultimately don't know. And I'll be honest with you guys, this morning, after really just listening and reading so much about all what's going on and taking it all in and everything, I gotta admit, I just broke down. I broke down hard. I was in my car in the garage. I had just gotten home this morning and just lost it. We really need to be praying. We really need to be praying for the Kurds. We need to be praying for God's kingdom to come through all of this. There's the Christian community in the Middle East has already been just decimated. I mean, can you believe that Syria not too long ago was 10% Christian? That Iraq had millions of Christians? I mean, the communities have just been decimated. And I just wonder if Trump could have done more to avert this. I don't know what is going on here. That's where my heart is. Next week, I might come back and say, you know what, Trump is right, and these are the reasons why. Sadly, I don't see it when you do the kind of look at the full scope of what is going on. But I will say it's not too late. It's also not too late for Trump to step in and maybe act as the Air Force, back them up in some way or really threaten Turkey much more severely. But the thing is, Trump knew this is what was going to happen. I mean, you don't think in that phone call between Trump and Erdogan, it wasn't communicated on some level what was going to happen. Trump got those troops out of the way because he knows that Turkey, he knew that Turkey was going in. Why would he change his decision now if what's happening is something that he already knew was going to happen? And keeping a few troops there to help prevent that, I don't personally see as too great of a cost to protect the murder of thousands and thousands. All right, guys, well, that is going to do it for this rather depressing edition of Mideast News Brief. This is not what I was wanting to talk about after my last show. I expected to do a lot more on the Israeli elections. By the way, I'm not aware of any progress with the Israeli elections right now, but hopefully next week we will have some more news there. Look, the Middle East is a depressing place. It's a tough neighborhood. It's a terrible neighborhood. And what it does is it goes to show that ideas have consequences. And what that region needs, I mean, even if you, which this would be a horrible, horrible thing to do, but even if you went in and exterminated everybody in the region, you still have the bad ideas that resurge. And what is the bad idea? The bad idea is that Islam teaches that it will one day rule the world and that everybody will be subject to Allah and to the teachings of his prophet, Muhammad. That needs to be replaced with a better idea. It needs to be replaced with a better idea. And I wonder if God allows a lot of this stuff to go on because in some way it reinforces over and over and over and over and over again the horrific nature of Islam and the effects, the unbelievably horrific effects Islam has in the world. Whether it's Sunni or Shia, it really doesn't matter, and that's most of it. Whether it's Sunni or Shia, that the ideas are terrible. And what they need to know is that God, in his mercy, sent his son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross for the sins of the world. And then God raised him from the dead, defeating death. And whoever chooses to turn away from their sins and put their faith and trust in Jesus Christ as the Son of God will receive forgiveness of sins and everlasting life. And if you have listened to this podcast, and if you're a listener to this podcast and you've never made a commitment to Christ, I would respectfully encourage you. God just doesn't want us to be religious. He just doesn't want us to think about him or just have some belief in God. It says in the book of James that even the demons believe and shudder. It is, but what the demons have not done is put their faith and trust in Jesus Christ, receiving him as their Lord and Savior. And if you would like to do that right now, pray with me. Pray with me from the heart. Pray along with me. The Bible says today is the day of salvation. Don't put off a relationship with God another day. So pray with me. Father, I thank you so much for sending your son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross for my sins. I believe he is your son. I believe he died on the cross for my sins, and I believe he rose from the dead. And I'll put my faith and trust in Jesus, and I give my life over to him. In Jesus' name, amen. Today is the day of salvation, but why is all this going on? If the Middle East was full of followers of Jesus, the leaders had Christian ideology, this would not be going on. This would not be going on. Now, at the same time, I recognize that in the past, people have used Christian ideology. But overall, you look, those areas of the world are the best to live in today. It's those with a Judeo-Christian framework and history. It's as simple as that. All right, guys. Well, thank you again for joining us on this week's edition of Mideast News Brief. Email me, mideast@cgmradio.com. Follow me on Twitter @MideastBriefing. I love to hear from you guys, so please stay in touch. And I do hope to have an expert in this realm on very, very soon. So I will keep you guys posted on that. Thanks again for listening. Have a blessed weekend, and pray, please pray for the Kurdish people.